Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your hoarse-voiced host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Can you say that 10 times real fast?
Hoarse-voiced host. I'm barely able to say it one time slow, and you want to push me to the outer limits?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask.
I like that you're wearing that that hermetically sealed bubble around me. I don't blame you. I'm coming down with diseases on a left and right scale here. I don't even know what to do with anymore, Tim.
That's not good.
I don't know if DARPA is practicing on me, trying to figure out how to wipe out the rest of the world by using my body as a maintenance board for different viruses.
Well, we're running out
DARPA
of antibiotics.
Do that, Tim? Is that a DARPA thing?
It might be a DARPA thing. We're running out of antibiotics, Dave. So I think what it is the government's now trying to figure out how to create one big superbug that'll wipe out the rest of the bugs and then develop an antibiotic that'll kill that bug. See how that works?
It's not working for me, man. I'm going over a week on this right now. I'm not sleeping. This cold is brutal. My wife has had to deal with man flu for the last 8-9 days, Tim. I'm sure there's a special place in heaven for her. I'll never get in there, but she will. I'm the biggest baby when I'm sick. Biggest baby. And that says a lot because I know a lot of big babies out there, Tim. But, yeah, it's been a rough ride. Listen, season finale just happened of Holzer Files. I just wanted to take a moment to thank everybody who tuned in and made it part of your world for the last 10 weeks on Travel Channel. I know everybody keeps asking, when is season two? When is season two? I don't know. They have not formally approached us yet. They definitely are interested in discussions, I guess. That's all I really know. So, you know, I'll leave it up to the powers to be. The ratings were great. You guys were great. So much love and support on social media, which is uncanny because social media is a cesspool of nasty things to say to one another, Tim, hidden behind that mask of anonymity. All I really saw was a lot of love and positivity coming forward for the show.
Very true.
So thank you all. And set your DVRs to stun. If you missed any episodes, they're going to be replaying the hell out of them, I believe, for the next couple of months, which may help them gauge as well. How does it replay? So if you're interested, the Holzer file, set your DVR. That way you can go catch up on all the episodes that you might have missed. Or get the Travel Channel Go app and never miss any episodes of your favorite Travel Channel TV shows. All right, sir. We've got a lot to discuss today. I do want to mention the holidays are upon us, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be looking for that perfect last-minute gift item.
Sure.
I have an idea in mind.
Okay.
Tim.
Okay.
I've got a little book out there called The Other Side, a Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also another part of that title called Teen's Guide, but I leave that part out because it was actually written for everybody.
Okay.
And in the last minute, the publisher decided, hey, you know, Twilight's popular.
Ooh.
Let's make this a teen book. So really all we did then was put in an extra chapter on protection. which is weird coming from a guy with 11 kids. But we put in a chapter on protection. But there's it's a fun little book on everything from putting together a team to examining dust orbs. What are ghosts? Why do we investigate? We go over some really interesting bits. People have told me that have read it that they really love it, even though it's a easy breezy read through. It gives a lot of information and doesn't do it in a way that talks down to the reader. $10, that's all I ask for a copy of the book. I will autograph it if you are so inclined. And if you're interested in getting it out before the holidays, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Subject, I want a book. And we will send you an invoice. As soon as you make the payment, we will ship that book out to you and get it out. So hopefully you'll have it before the holidays. We're doing our best to get these books in and out pretty quickly. But it's a good little stocking stuffer gift idea. If that's not good enough, you want more paranormal themed items, go check out darknessradio.com. Click on the store tab and then click on our Amazon storefront. You'll go in. We've got books from the paranormal side of things, things that you hear on this show. You've got True Crime Tuesday books. Then there are things to watch. So there's many of our favorite TV shows and movies. And then there are the paranormal merchandise and gift section. So we've got them broken up into great little subsections of cool items. And there is something for everyone. Every price point could be met. Every fascination of the supernatural and paranormal, from Loch Ness Monster soup ladles, Tim, to Bigfoot slippers and socks, to cool astro lava lamps. Astro, nice. I said, Tim.
Oh, astro.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So we've got everything right there, and every purchase you make goes to help me. That's where it really breaks down. So it doesn't take anything away from the seller. They get all of their dough. This is just a neat little thing they call an affiliate, an influencer program, Tim, which sounds like mind manipulation to me. But it's not. It's all a plus side. Huh. And you know what you can find there? You can find a lot of good books, including Memoirs of a Future Ghost. Heather Scarborough Dobson, our guest, joins us right now. She is the author of this new book, and she started life as a scared, too smart for her own good little girl in South Charleston, West Virginia. Sounds like you, Tim. Too smart for your own good little girl.
Oh, I thought you meant growing up in West Charleston. No. I've never been there. Yeah.
No, but Heather had a father who loved to share stories of their home state's ghosts, and she was fascinated. She remained frightened of the unknown, especially the blank slate of death and eternity. That's one that gets under my craw every night, Tim, before sleep. What comes next? What if it's all a big gag, an eternal gag? Finally, I had somebody tell me something, Tim, that's starting to put a little bit more ease into my heart where it comes to death.
What's that?
He said, "What's your biggest fear, Dave?" I said, "That there's nothing." And he goes, "Then you won't know. You'll be dead."
Okay, that's creepy.
Right, but it's true. You know, when you boil it right down to the basics of it, you're either going to move on to something fantastic or you're blown out like a candle in the wind and you won't know because it's all over.
Well, thank you, Elton John. But here's the thing. That would cause me more anxiety. That wouldn't cause me less.
No, Tim, don't get in my head, man. I'm starting to finally find some peace with this.
All right.
And now you're going to make me start questioning things again.
All right.
Maybe we should go to the expert on this.
Yeah, let's go to the expert. Yeah.
Scarborough Dobson. Am I saying that right, Heather?
Yes, you are, Dave. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you for electing to take your story and share it with the world. So you were scared but too smart for your own good. That seems kind of like a bit of a dichotomy. Usually when we know too much, we're not frightened. Right.
Well, I know a lot about that has to do with the living, but I didn't know anything about the afterlife. And so it terrified me, or the possibility of one. And so rather than, try to just accept that someday it's going to happen and be fine with it, I was never fine with it. And I needed to get answers for myself. So that's why I started investigating the paranormal, like many of us do.
At what age did this realization kind of strike you? You know, the fear and anxiety of death and the afterlife.
Right. I think I was about 5 years old when I figured out that I was going to die. And it really hit home when my great-grandmother passed away and went to her funeral. And of course, there she is in her coffin and, asking, "Can I touch her?" And the relative said, "Yeah, that's fine." And realizing that she didn't flinch, she didn't move, she was room temperature. She wasn't warm. And, you know, trying to process that as a 5 or 6 year old, and, you know, that she's going to be in this box that's going to go underground and she's never coming out. And it was terrifying. It was, you know, and I didn't understand at all. And even though I went to church and, you know, my parents would try to placate me with, oh, you're going to heaven and streets of gold and that type of thing, it never helped. It never worked for me. And so, yeah, I figured out how to deal with my fears, and I figured out how to cope. And then I had children, and suddenly it wasn't about my death anymore. It was about their impending death and of terrifying me of, what am I going to tell them? You know, I'm not worried about the sex talk. I'm not worried about toilet training or anything like that. It's, oh my gosh, what am I going to tell them? How am I going to look them straight in the face with an answer that I don't even know? So
I find it fascinating that you were about 5 years old. That's around the age I remember becoming consciously aware of death. Mm-hmm. And I'd already lost my grandmother and my grandfather's second fiance, who passed away of cancer. And, you know, there had been some death in my life, but I was very young at that stage and couldn't really wrap my head around it or the concept. But I remember it about the age of 5. It came barnstorming through my world, and I couldn't sleep. I still have issues with it to this day, with fear of death and what happens next. And I don't meet many people that started about that early. You know, most of them seem to have kind of awakened either in their early or late teens or early 20s to that concept that we're not immortal. And, you know, was it a source of anxiety for you on a regular basis growing up? Did it start you at the age of 5 of pushing and asking and looking for answers at that point? Or was it always just a fear nagging at you in the back of your skull?
Oh, I was pushing for answers. And I was very much one of those kids that you could hand her a book and set me in the corner, and I was happy. And so I was at the library trying to read up on anything and everything that I could get my hands on. And there were there's so many different religions and so many different philosophies, and I couldn't figure out what mine was. You know, the second I would read about something and think, okay, well, that sounds interesting, that sounds like something I could relate to, but how do we truly know that that's what's going to happen after we die? And because this author hasn't actually died and come back, him or herself. And I just managed to learn how to cope with it. Like you know, the thoughts really don't hit until it's late at night and you're in your brain by yourself. There's no one, there's no external stimulus. And so I learned how to cope with that. But like I said, it was after I had my children and, you know, going through postpartum depression and anxiety, it just made it 100 times worse. And I have a background in physics. I'm very much a scientific person in how I approach life and how I approach questions and things of that matter. And, you know, so reading about the universe and how, you know, it's going to end someday. I mean, there were moments in college when I was studying and I thought, what's the point of all this? What's the point of the Mona Lisa? What's the point in having children? What's the point in, you know, preserving anything or saving anything when the universe itself is just going to fade away to nothing? It was terrifying. And so
I bet you were popular at parties.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm such a popular gal. I'm not at all let down.
So when you say that you've got a background in physics, can you explain that to us a little bit more?
I have a bachelor's degree in physics. I did undergraduate research at the University of Alabama in Huntsville on plasma physics. And I was actually considering going there for my master's degree, but it was one of those, wow, do I want to study the behavior of particles in the Earth's magnetosphere for the rest of my life? Or do I want to, I don't know, do something interesting? And so I actually came to Georgia, moved to Georgia, and became a scuba diving instructor.
Boy, that is a radical departure from your original game plan.
But what's funny is that I remember sitting in my physics classes and having my professors tell me, you know, oh, I know a lot of guys who either got their PhD in physics or they went to seminary. And so physics seems to be one of those fields where you either stick with it or you kind of go off left field. And I went left field without the, philosophy side of it. But I do take a lot of what I learned in physics and science classes and the scientific method with me through investigating the paranormal and trying to explain what's happening.
Good. Well, let's start there then, because I talk to a lot of people that bandy about the term physics. Oh, well, you know, the physics are beginning to prove it. The physics are showing this quantum entanglement and right. quantum structures and time and space. But, you know, it's a lot of bluster. You know, I ask, well, what's your background? Well, you know, I've read a couple of books and I used to watch Quantum Leap is kind of the extent of it. So I like that you legitimately have a background in physics. So in examining the scientific principles of supernatural claims, what does physics really tell us about the possibilities or probabilities of these things?
Well, you know, what I love about physics is that we don't know everything. I remember teaching a group of high schoolers.
Hey, seems like Tim and I have been a part of the physics world for quite a while then. We know nothing.
We know nothing. We know some, but we know nothing. And I remember teaching a bunch of high schoolers a number of years ago through an astronomy unit. They were an academic competition team, and they had to learn about astronomy, and their teacher was a social science teacher. And so she brought me in to work with them on astronomy. And I remember the running joke became, you can't explain it, then, you know, it must be dark matter. It's dark matter's fault. We can blame everything on dark matter. And so it's sort of my joke about the paranormal. Oh, it's all dark matter. But, you know, one of my go-to explanations from a science aspect is, again, we do not know what's happening. There is clearly something that is happening to people who have paranormal experiences. Now, whether that is truly someone who has died and it's their spirit, or whether you have this idea of multiple infinite quantum universes, and the person in who has died in your universe has not died in 500 million other universes, and for whatever reason, you know, you're seeing an opening into one of those other universes and you're experiencing that person. So if that's the case, why am I not, you know, why is that not happening all the time? But it could also explain doppelgangers. It could explain all types of hauntings. You know, quantum entanglement is fascinating, but like the slip in between different multiple universes, quantum universes, again, I need more data. I need to make absolutely certain that, you know, if a proton in the Andromeda galaxy shifts, then it's going to affect me. I'm not quite sure if that's something that I can fully get behind or can understand. But I do think there are a lot of different hypotheses that could explain paranormal activity. And I really do wish that more scientists would, instead of just, you know, dismissing the paranormal as junk science, as hokum, as a bunch of mumbo jumbo, I really wish they would study it more and try to see what's happening and not just throw it away as something that's meaningless. But I hope that answered.
What's your kind of takeaway from this then? Do we surpass this physical form, or are we more than likely just intertwining with multiple realities and parallel universes? And those are the brief fleeting moments of high strangeness that people seem to encounter. What if you had to put your finger on one of those right now as your choice, what would it be?
Well, my emotional choice would be that we exist, that we continue to exist after this life. But the scientist in me does seem to think that my existence after this universe's life is simply going to continue in other quantum universes until my existences there cease. I honestly think our afterlife is tied up in the genetics of our children and our grandchildren. And I think that is how our existences continue.
So the genetic DNA memory
right.
is what haunts our future, what lives on through us?
Exactly. That's what I literally think.
So do you think then that, that would explain why family members might see ghosts, because if you have genetic memory, it would be a part of every member of our family going forward.
Right.
So they might be able to tap in, like the scene from Star Wars when R2-D2 comes alive and out comes the holographic projection of Princess Leia. Is that a ghost, or is it nothing more than the projection of a memory that's available to us as a human construct? So, I understand that. But then you have people that are adopted that see the ghosts of their adopted parents, right? That where does that lie? Is that something that's then a state of mind, a state of consciousness, or an existence on a plane of reality that surrounds us?
Well, and I know, I've spoken to my fellow investigators, and, something that a lot of paranormal investigators don't take into account, I'm assuming, this is an assumption on my part, but I feel like this happens, is, we all talk about baggage. We all have emotional baggage and, lifetime experiences. So, let's say I go investigate a home here in Woodstock, Georgia, where I live. So, and the client claims that it's their grandfather who they think is, haunting their home. Well, and I capture evidence of a male voice. Well, is it the grandfather or is it my father? Because my father has been dead for 22 years, and I would love for him to be close by. I wish he were here with me still. But I'm carrying that emotional baggage or that emotional imprint of my father. So is it the grandfather of the client or is it me? So how much of what we're recording as paranormal investigators is things that we're carrying with us?
That's a great point. And I've tried that when we've gone to some locations when we're trying to communicate with the ghosts of the soap factory.
Right.
And we get no response, right. Nothing. And then I ask for one of the spirits that may be there with one of us, our relatives. Is there anybody there that can help bridge this chasm and let us know, is there something else here? Right. Is, a message. And I've had some success. Tim and I have witnessed that in a few times and in a few places. We've had some success with that, mm-hmm. of kind of employing our own spirits to help us in a location that seems active yet inactive at the time that we're there.
Right.
Now, do you find in your experience of investigation that there are key elements you look for to what you believe is a real haunting as opposed to somebody just freaking themselves out?
So many people ask me, okay, what's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you on investigation? And honestly, I'm always talking about how the living are more frightening than the dead.
Agreed, 100%.
Because, and honestly, one of the first things I look for is the client's state of mind and just how worked up are you over this? And so that's the first thing that I'm approaching is, are you, how are you doing? Are you okay? And how are you perceiving this activity? And living in the South is it's a fascinating study of, the human attitude towards the paranormal, because down here, with the very strong evangelical contingent of the population, everything is bad. Everything paranormal is bad. It's evil. It's awful. It's out to get us. And because, when you die, you're either going to heaven or hell. There is no in between. You're not sticking around. So if there's something bumping up and down the stairs, it's got to be a demon. And so most of what we find is just calming our clients down and getting them to understand that, okay, this is not bad. You need to accept that. And considering the fact that this could be scientifically explained, or this could be, something paranormal in nature. Let's think about how many people have lived and died on this planet in the whole of human history. So it's, if you go from that side of it, it's a wonder that not every square inch of this planet isn't haunted. So let's calm down. And so then after we've calmed the clients down, then I like to look at everything, of course, from a scientific angle, trying to debunk everything and understand, are the cabinet doors opening because they're not level, et cetera, et cetera. And I have only I would say a third of our investigations have merited me saying there is truly something here. And of course, we're only there for a small window of time, and you can't get paranormal occurrences to happen on command. It's, you know, it's not going to follow our rules and restrictions. And so I would say it's just a third of the time that I get a voice, or that I get something that happens to me personally, that I get an experience that I can't explain, or that we get object movement. I mean, in the 12 years that we've done this, we've only gotten 3 pieces of video evidence that we can say with certainty is something that we can't explain. So it's really a small number for me, at least. Maybe I'm going about it wrong. I don't know.
No, you know, that especially when it comes to video, it is very hard. Yeah. And you've got to be very skeptical towards all the different aspects of what you're catching. And a lot of people don't take time to really respect the fact that there are other aspects in the surroundings that may be causing reflections, right, casting refractions, or, you know, causing anomalies to take place that are completely explainable. So I appreciate that you take that time and have limited yourself to, you know, such a small amount of what you believe to be successful videos. But Tim, my friend,
yes,
you know where there are a lot of successful videos?
No, where's that?
Well, that's Pluto TV, buddy. They've got over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. But I have to address a few listeners here, Tim.
Okay.
I have to address a few listeners who have taken me to task. And they say, oh, Dave Schrader of the Holzer Files on the Travel Channel, how dare you tell us to cut cable, get rid of direct and satellite TV? How are we to watch the Holzer Files? Huh? What about that, Mr. Smarty, Smarty Pants? I say cut the cable, cut the satellite TV. But Dave, then how do we support you? Well, it's easy. iTunes has all the episodes available for $1.69 or $1.99. Mm-hmm. There are alternatives to your favorite shows to watch. But for God's sakes, Pluto TV has over 100 TV channels to watch and choose from. Thousands of movies on demand. And the best part is they're all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. On your phone, your Roku, Amazon Fire TV, your Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations. Maybe you're in the future listening to this, and you could just use that little chip implant in your forehead. Tap it now. Download Pluto TV and take it with you anywhere that you stream. That's just my two cents, Tim.
Sure.
Yeah, but people, you can still find ways to watch the Holzer Files. They've got a channel on YouTube. They've got for Travel Channel that you can get the episodes for like $1.99. You can get them on Amazon. You can get them, I think, on Hulu. So there's different ways to get your favorite shows and still cut cable cords. So that's all I'm telling you. Save some time, folks. That's all. Heather Scarborough Dobson, our guest, her book, Memoirs of a Future Ghost. I love the title of that, first of all. Fantastic thinking. But I'd like to revisit your youth a little bit, Heather. And did you have paranormal experiences growing up? Aside from the ghost stories that Dad would tell you, was there ever anything that occurred to you personally?
No, actually. I never had anything happen to me personally. I had a very vivid imagination. So, of course, I imagined that the Mothman was in our hotel room in Point Pleasant. And I imagined that the Braxton County Monster was going to kill us on a Girl Scout trip. And that the Greenbrier ghost was haunting my grandparents' property in Greenbrier County. So I was very much a vivid imagination type child. The first time anything paranormal happened to me wasn't until a friend of ours passed away. It was one of the owners of a business where I worked. Her husband passed away. And I was, you know, 26, 27 at the time. And when he died, you know, his wife and mother-in-law had always talked about how the three of them would talk about, oh, when I die, I'll come, you know, give you a sign, et cetera. And so my sorority sister and I are sitting in the funeral home, and Jack, who had passed away, his wife gets up to talk about him. And for the full 2 minutes that she spoke, one of the chandeliers in the chapel where we sat started swinging. And it was a really big chandelier. It's not like a small one that could be affected by air currents. It was a very large light fixture.
Was she noticing that as well as she was?
She was not aware of it. My sorority sister and I were elbowing each other. And as soon as the service was over, you know, we run out to the funeral director like, oh, hey, really casually, is this place haunted? He looked at us like we were crazy. And so when we got back, we pointed it out to her what had happened. And we went back to her house for the wake. And her friends were like, oh, my gosh, we saw it, too. And she was completely oblivious because she was reading from, you know, the sheet that she had typed out, trying not to, you know, lose her emotions and cry. And so she was very focused and she had no clue. And so, yeah, that was probably the first time anything happened to me that was paranormal, that I felt was paranormal, that I couldn't explain.
How did that impact you going forward? I mean, coming from a science background and then seeing something, it's one thing to be told ghost stories, but then to witness something really unusual for yourself.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, it really blew my mind because I remember going back into the chapel and looking around and thinking, okay, there has to be a rational explanation, and trying to see where there, you know, air conditioning vents, or, you know, is somebody punking us? Is there like fishing line or something, or what is going on? And I couldn't figure it out. And it was really eye-opening to me that, okay, wow. So these aren't just stories designed to tell kids late at night to get them to behave and stay in their beds and not leave the house and not run away and, you know, that type of thing. It's stuff like this really happens. And yeah, it really blew my mind.
Well, isn't it funny that we'll jump to the illogical?
Yes.
In this case of, is somebody punking us? Yeah, because that's a big thing at funeral homes, right?
Somebody's
while you're up there trick us. Yeah.
It would be a big thing if I owned a funeral home. Let's just put it that way.
You're putting the fun back in funeral, right?
Funeral. Yeah.
You can't have a funeral without FUN, folks.
No, you can't.
All right. So, that's a pretty good little start. So, you know, that's your indoctrination, actually witnessing some of these. What were some of the stories that your father would tell you that really stuck with you growing up?
Oh, well, you know, he grew up in Kingston, West Virginia, which actually no longer exists, a little coal mining town. So, of course, I would hear stories about Tommyknockers down in coal mines and how superstitious coal miners were, because my grandfather was a coal miner. And a lot of my dad's family worked down in the mines. And it's fascinating to, you know that these big, strong men who literally give their lives and their bodies to an industry that couldn't care less about them, that they're so superstitious. And they will tell, you know, they believe the ghost stories. They know that if they hear knocking, to get out of there. They know that if something out of the ordinary happens, or if they forget to do, you know, one little superstitious thing, that's the day that the mine's going to cave in. And so I remember him telling me those stories. And of course, he lived in Charleston, West Virginia, which isn't too far from Point Pleasant, which, as we know, is where the Mothman, the famous Mothman stories come from. And so he read the news articles live when they were happening about the Mothman. And so he would tell me stories about that. And I remember bringing home the Mothman Prophecies by John Keel as a 10, 11-year-old, reading that book and just being absolutely fascinated. And he was able to supplement those stories with what he read and, you know, the gossip in the neighborhoods of what was going on with that. And so I heard those stories. And then, of course, I heard the hillbilly sort of ghost stories of, you know, the hand of the murdered wife who's buried, and her hand moves the lilac bush and raps against the window every night to torture the husband who killed her. And, you know, those types of scary stories. So, yeah, I can't help but affect you as a child and make you fascinated with that and want to know more.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll explore more of your story And I'd like to hear about some of the places that you've investigated, some of the claims that have, you know, interested you the most, and what have been some of the profound experiences that you've had. So stay tuned. Memoirs of a Future Ghost continues. Heather Scarborough Dobson, our guest here on Beyond the Darkness. So maybe you're looking for a fun way to pass the time, you know, while still stimulating your brain and enjoying breathtaking visuals and a gripping story. Your answer, Best Fiends. Take it from your best friends here at Beyond the Darkness. Best Fiends is the game for you. Best Fiends is a casual game that anybody can play, but it's, I would say it's more slanted towards adults. Is that a fair assessment, Tim?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Best part is you can spend as much or as little time as you'd like in the game. As a matter of fact, depending on the day and my travel schedule, I've spent as little as 10 minutes a day playing it just to kill time, up to a couple hours, because it's so fun and engaging. It's not one of those things that you find yourself addicted to that you have to do, you have to continue on, but it's nice to know that it's there. It's something that's entertaining. It's got great puzzles. It's got fantastic characters. And, you know, it kind of blends the best of many worlds in an evolutionary game where you can take these basic characters, evolve them, have more fun with them, watch their abilities as they're able to help you traverse this universe that they've created in Best Fiends to beat the system. And I love how it really engages you to try to come up with new and inventive ways to use your characters so that you can win the game. And I have been doing this now for, boy, I think about a year. Absolutely love it. I love playing along with many of you. How do I know that you're playing? Well, because you probably logged in like I have through your Facebook, and we can see each other as we're passing each other on the route. My favorite part is seeing that Tim's like four levels ahead of me and then beating him and moving past those levels, only to wake up the next morning and find out he's now two levels ahead of me again, because we're competitive that way. But it's a lot of fun, and we enjoy doing it. There's lots of bright colors, really cool visual design of the different characters and the levels, the puzzles, the things that you get to engage in. I would say one of my favorite parts of playing this game as well is its portability. You don't have to be connected to the internet to play it. You can, you don't have to be. There are different puzzles and games that are available, different levels and achievements you can get when you are connected. So that's something to bear in mind. And it's unique. I think it's really kind of an exciting little fun puzzle game experience, unlike any other puzzle games out there. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events, so this never gets old. And Best Fiends treats the game kind of like, I would say, more of a service for their players. So if you find yourself playing in a random, weird place and you play at random times like Tim and I do, look around as you're passing through the maps of these lands. See how many people you know and recognize might be up at those strange hours with you as well. It really helps to build a nice sense of community and camaraderie. So I would I'd recommend it. If you haven't already played it, engage your brain with fun puzzles, collect tons of really cool little characters, and trust me, with over 100 million downloads, it's a 5-star rated mobile puzzle game that is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends. FIENDS. Join the adventure. Tim and I would like to see you along the route. Maybe, just maybe, if you try hard enough, you can eventually catch up to us. We'll see you there. Go sign up. Get yourself involved in the game now. Best Fiends, the best around.
If you like this show, then you've got to check out the Adam Carolla Show every weekday on Podcast One. The Ace Man still holds the Guinness Book of World Records title for most downloaded podcast in the world as he complains about whatever's on his mind with his celebrity pals. So don't miss it. Weekdays on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
All right, we're back. Fascinating conversation today. I'm really enjoying this. And our guest, who has a book out. As a matter of fact, we have a link up to that book in today's program. So if you just look on our description and header for today, there's a link to her book so that you can find it. Memoirs of a Future Ghost. Heather Dobson, our guest. All right, Heather. So you grew up in a very rich environment of haints and hollers and ghosts and Mothman and just about any kind of phenomena you could think of.
Yes.
It inspires you, your fear of death and want and desire to understand more about it, to not just read about it. You can't placate yourself with just reading about it. You want to put yourself in the game and start investigating. So let's talk about that journey. How do you take that leap? Is it ever a weird moment for you? I mean, listen, you're talking to two bonehead radio show hosts, so the next leap to Ghostbusters, not so out of the way. Somebody with a physics background, somebody with science background, was it strange? Did you feel like you might be betraying the brother and sisterhood of science by entangling yourself in such, you know, silly shenanigans?
I did a little bit. And of course, that very first investigation where absolutely nothing happened, I was terrified the entire time. I think every hair on my body stood straight up for five solid hours. And, you know, like any other experience, the more you do it, the more cynical, I guess, you become, or you become used to it. And I was less frightened and more, oh my gosh, that just happened. It needs to happen again. And so it's funny when I talk to people and they're like, aren't you scared? Aren't you terrified? I'm like, no, actually, when stuff happens, you know, it takes a moment for that to process that that's happened. And then it's excitement and you run towards it and you're asking it and you're pleading with whatever that is to happen again. And it's no longer frightening. It's no longer scary. And I decided that I wasn't going to be betraying science, that, you know, what I wanted to do as a paranormal investigator and with my team and also instill in my children, because I would love for them to carry on with this someday, is that the answer of the paranormal is not going to be solved in my lifetime or your lifetime, and probably not even my children's lifetime. This is something that needs to be done for the long haul. This is going to be a generational study. And it's something that I think as paranormal investigators, we need to accept and know and be okay with and pass on the, you know, the scientific method of investigating the paranormal to the next generation. And, you know, they can add the data and the experiences. And then maybe, you know, I don't know how many years down the road, I don't know how many generations down the road, then we finally have an answer as to what it is, a definitive answer. And maybe it'll go from being a junk science and something that's scoffed at by the scientific community to something that is studied and accepted and papers are written about it in scientific journals.
All right. Now I got to ask you, be honest here.
Okay.
You know, I've given the stock answer to, oh, no, I'm not afraid. You go to these places to look for these experiences.
Yes.
Listen, people have seen me on the Holzer files. I've been afraid. You get afraid. You said you were unnerved in there. But when something does happen, it doesn't ever force you to just want to bolt the hell out of there?
You know, honestly, it's only with client experiences when I've wanted to bolt. I have never been diagnosed officially with anything on the autism spectrum, but I have a feeling that I have some aspects of it. So a lot of social interaction is awkward for me, face-to-face social interaction. And so honestly, it's having to look a client in the face who is a trash hoarder who has an apartment full of cockroaches, who swears up and down that they have paranormal experiences, and you know that nothing there is paranormal.
Why are you looking at Tim when you were saying that?
I see you, Tim. And you know that what's happening is psychological. That is actually what upsets me and makes me want to bolt from situations, from paranormal investigations. I have honestly never gotten scared on an investigation from paranormal activity.
But what about the concept that maybe the reason they are that way is because of the influence of strange supernatural forces?
It could be. I mean, it could entirely be that. But until I know definitively that they're trash hoarding because of their paranormal experiences, then I have to take at face value that probably what they have going on is psychological in nature, and then go to the paranormal answer when I can't answer it in any other fashion.
I appreciate that. Very good. Well, let's talk about some of the locations that you've had to investigate. Do you go out to famous locations as well to try to see if you can put an aspect to it that maybe other people have missed?
Right. Most of what we investigate, of course, are private homes and businesses here in the Atlanta and North Georgia area. As far as famous locations, I have investigated Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. And I have investigated Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm probably famous as far as the North Georgia area that really no one outside of the North Georgia area would know about is the Chastain House, which is in Fannin County, Georgia. And that's a rather well-known place that, you know, of course, all the teenagers drive by and, oh, that place is so haunted and that's crazy. And they like to, you know, bust in there on a Friday night and try to get their scares on. And we've managed to investigate there several times, numerous times. But, of course, being a small town paranormal investigator, I don't get to investigate a lot of famous locations. But I have been to a couple and they have been absolutely fascinating. And I actually went to one of your panels, Dave, at DragonCon a number of years ago. And you had mentioned the idea that what if we are creating the paranormal, sort of like, you know, the idea of the power of positive thinking, the power of prayer, how if you get enough people putting effort into a conscious thought that they can manifest it and make it happen. So what's fascinating to me is places like Waverly Hills and Old South Pittsburgh that are haunted. And of course, like I had mentioned before, you know, what kind of baggage am I taking on an investigation? How much of Waverly Hills is tuberculosis patients who have passed? How much of Waverly Hills is, you know, multiple quantum universes? And how much of Waverly Hills is all of us in the country projecting on Waverly as a haunted location? Does that make sense?
Completely. I don't know if you saw my talk at DragonCon, but we talked about that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I appreciate that. Now, so what do you make of places like Waverly Hills? And did you have any paranormal experiences there?
Oh, yeah, a lot. And what's interesting about Waverly is, you know, we had used a millimeter, of course, you know, an EMF meter to try to get responses, because, you know, sometimes that's an easier way of getting responses of, okay, you know, touch the antenna and that'll, you know, make a sound and the lights will go off if you break that electromagnetic field. And, you know, sometimes that's easier to get a response, a yes, no response than anything else. And I remember asking we were asking questions about the patients who had been there when it was a geriatric center. I can't remember the name of it. You know, after it had shut down as a tuberculosis hospital, it became a geriatric center until the early 1980s. And that was what we got the biggest response was more, not really from tuberculosis patients, but from elderly patients that had been there. And so it's just fascinating the amount of history in that location. And again, how much of it is all of us tramping through there day after day, night after night, and investigating? And so what truly is Waverly Hills and what is transient that we've all brought with us that just sticks around for a few hours or a few days? I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, you know, and if you're in there with a focus, right. John Sable has talked about kind of the supernatural archaeology mm-hmm. of a situation where you go in divining to get to that specific locale in history, peeling through the layers of the book to read that chapter. So if you were focused heavily on contacting people there when it was a working geriatric center, mm-hmm. you know, were you in effect, you know, kind of filtering the other messages and other layers of time and just getting right to what you were looking for, the expectation level again?
Right. Probably one of my most favorite EVPs from there is, you know, there is the actual, you know, story, and I know it did actually happen. It wasn't, you know, one of these apocryphal sort of, you know, legends about a homeless gentleman who had fallen down the elevator shaft there at Waverly Hills when it was empty and, you know, homeless people were taking up residence inside it, and he had actually died, and he had a German Shepherd, I think, with him. And so I think what was fascinating was actually getting a dog that barked in the microphone of my recorder. It wasn't like some far off, you know, barking from a neighboring hill of, you know, a Chihuahua, you know, 2 miles over, and the bark is carrying. And, you know, that was fascinating to me, was just that, oh my gosh, was that gentleman's dog? Of, you know, are we connecting with something there? You know, asking about him, are you here, and are you still stuck? And so Waverly is just interesting. There are just so many layers to it. And I know so many, you know, what a lot of people see on TV and the media about it is all doom and gloom, because, you know, that's what sells. The scary stuff sells. But it's like an onion. It really is an onion.
All right. So that place obviously had a profound effect on you with what you experienced and could take away from it. What are some of the other stories that really have affected you?
Right. We investigated a mall here in the Atlanta area, and it's a mall that has 5 anchor stores, you know, the large department stores. And one of the anchor stores had shut down and closed down, and the mall used it as storage for their decorations, seasonal decorations. And since then, it has now become a movie theater. But at the time, it was still empty, and it was actually the security guards that asked us to come and investigate because they were having a lot of experiences. And probably one of the most profound things that happened to me on an investigation was sitting in this dark building, in this dark, you know, empty store with some ambient light coming in from the outside, and seeing a shadow just appear out of nowhere and walk across the room and then disappear with no footsteps, no sound. And trying to recreate that with my fellow investigators and knowing that I could see their features, I could see the color of their clothing in that ambient light. And what I saw and what the investigator next to me saw when I finally voiced, you know, oh my gosh, did you see that? And he said, I wondered if you were going to say something. But that shadow was an absence of light and an absence of form. And it was just it was one of those moments that when it happened, my brain was trying to process what I just saw. And I can see it as if it's happening in front of me, but I cannot explain it. No matter how hard I try, I cannot explain it.
That's got to be kind of exciting then, with a science background, to have something that, you know, upon further exam, there is no logical explanation for it, unless you want to say, you know, it's paranormal and that is the logical explanation.
Or going back to the high schoolers that I taught, you know, it's dark matter. We'll just blame everything on dark matter. It's fine.
right. Yeah, that which, you know, makes even less sense, because then we want to question, well, what is the purpose and true ability of dark matter?
Exactly. And could that be playing a role in paranormal occurrences and experiences? I don't know.
All right. Now, the experiments that you run, I mean, what are you doing that kind of, you know, puts things into a different realm for you? Obviously, you're not just going to get by with the same old that you see, you know, trotted out on TV and in all these other forms. So what have you decided to do to kind of shake the paranormal paradigm?
Probably the most basic thing that we do as a team is we definitely go into an investigation with a control team and an experimental team. And we try very hard to keep the experimental team, the control team in the dark, so to speak, pardon the pun. All they know is the client's address. We don't allow them in the house to do the walkthrough with the client. We specifically tell the client, hey, those guys out there are our control team. We don't want them to know anything about the activity going on in here. We do, and we get the control team to help us set up cameras, but that's it. They don't know anything about the location. And, you know, save that it's a house or a business in this part of town. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the control team to gather evidence that matches client experiences, or even to get evidence that matches experimental team evidence. Because the experimental team has the benefit of knowing what's going on, of course, and asking pointed questions. Is this the client's grandfather? Could this be a previous owner of the house, et cetera? And so that's what I really like. And we do find at times that the experimental team and the control team will have experiences that match, and the control team will have experiences that match the client experiences. And that's probably one of the easiest things that we've found that doesn't cost a dime in equipment or anything of that nature, is just going into an investigation with that type of scientific thinking.
Now, you mentioned that there's only been a handful of times that you've actually caught visual representation of what you believe to be paranormal.
Right.
Would you mind walking us through a couple of those stories and what type of evidence you got from it?
We had a client in downtown Atlanta who had lost her husband, and she had a nightstand where she had a picture, and it was a family picture, and that picture kept getting moved. So of course, you know, it would get, you know, it would fall down, you know, face down, or it would get moved on the nightstand. And she could not figure out what was going on. And so, of course, you know, we did the typical, okay, put the picture on there, jump around in the room, make, you know, check to see is the dresser, is the nightstand level. You know, we did the usual debunking. So then, of course, what we did is that's where we put our REM pod, which, of course, emits its own electromagnetic field out of the antenna. And we put it there thinking, okay, something's going to, if something's touching this picture and moving it, they're going to break that field on the antenna. So we do the investigation, and at one point the REM pod goes off and it goes crazy, and it goes off for 5 solid minutes, and we go in and reset it. We were in a different room at the time, and we had a camera on the REM pod. So we go back, and our tech manager is watching the video evidence, and he happens to scrub over the video, meaning it goes, you know, as he moves his mouse across the video window, it goes fast forward through the video. And when he does that, he notices that the REM pod is moving. And so he sped up the footage over 30, you know, he turned it into a 30-second piece of footage, but over 20 minutes, that REM pod moved several inches. And you only notice it when you speed up the video. Which is why we now, that was one of the things that we learned. Okay, now when we watch our video evidence, not only are we watching our video evidence in real time, we're watching it sped up, because you never know what's going to happen. And we went back and again checked, you know, tried to debunk what would make this REM pod move by itself. And REM pods, these pieces of equipment aren't lightweight. They aren't paper. They aren't, you know, light as feathers. It takes a little bit of effort to move those guys because they're heavy. Can't explain it. It was absolutely fascinating to us.
Now, you see something like that. All right. Now, have you put a new protocol into effect aside from watching the video? I mean, do you put down like a chalk line around items to see if there's any movement?
Yeah, we will put chalk lines down. Actually, you know, use that a lot, or even, you know, like a piece of butcher paper with, you know, an outline of a marker type of thing. If we can't, you know, find, if we don't want to mark up on the client's, furniture. And so, yeah, that's one of the new protocols that we've used, in addition to, you know, watching video at fast forward. Something else that we do now with a different investigation where we found some evidence of a shadow is, you know, it used to be, okay, yeah, we'll go ahead and hit record on the equipment and, you know, we'll start watching the videos when we enter the room. Well, this other piece of video evidence we captured 5-6 minutes into hitting record, and we hadn't even started the investigation yet. We were still outside the home deciding who's going to go in and who's going to take what equipment. Are you taking the recorder, or are you going to take the handheld camera and this type of thing? And we capture a shadow that moved across in front of the camera with no one in the house, no external light sources that we could explain, that, you know, there weren't any windows in this part of the house. It was just, yeah. So don't discount the video footage, you know, 2 minutes in, 3 minutes in. Don't discount the footage 5 minutes before we end the investigation. It's got to all be considered.
I get that aspect. you know, but when you're evaluating things like a shadow, how, what exactly can we do to measure the information we're getting from that?
Right. Well, what I found fascinating with that investigation was it was everything that the gentleman was describing, you know, he was terrified of it. But honestly, it sounded very benign in nature. And some of it sounded animal, for lack of a better way of putting it. And when you watch the video footage of the shadow, it's not a person-shaped shadow. It's low to the ground, and it was actually taken in his living room. And you see the shadow cross from one side of the room to the other and then back, and it's a low shadow. And when I presented that video to him, his immediate response was, "Holy crap, that's my dog." And he had had to put his dog to sleep several months prior. And when he examined that information and when it finally clicked with him, as far as all of the activity that was happening that was low to the ground, he would hear movement low to the ground. He would see shadows low to the ground. It was, oh, is that my pet? Is that my dog? And he wasn't scared any longer. So it's, you know, it's not always human in nature. And again, I don't have an explanation for that. Is that a slip in the universes that he's seeing his dog somewhere else, or I don't know. So either way, I think sometimes the information that we're presenting these people, it's just, don't be scared of it. I guess that's the biggest takeaway, is just don't be frightened. You know, you build so much up in your mind, and there's really nothing to be scared of most of the time.
Yeah, that's what the demons want you to believe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Be calm, everyone. There's nothing to be scared of here.
All right. I know our time is fleeting on this, but what are some of the other examples of really interesting paranormal phenomena that you have witnessed? And what do you make of the EVP experience?
Oh, my gosh. I still can't figure EVPs out. I can't decide, is it, you know, pareidolia? Is it our ears that are trying to make sense of the chaos of the white noise? Because even when there's no one in the room and there's no external noise and there's nothing going on, there's still a white noise aspect there. So are we picking up on something? And are we interpreting it with our brains? Like one person hears "Get out" and the other person says, or the other person hears something completely different. So I honestly don't know what to make of EVPs, and I'm not an audio specialist, but I do know that I've heard interesting things. I've heard footsteps that shouldn't be there. So why do I hear a footstep and not a voice? I've heard a very clear, you know, what we consider a class A voice, responses to questions that are intelligent. At Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, you know, supposedly the spirit of a hospice patient who is still there and active in that area of the hospital, you know, asking her pointedly, did you have any children when you were alive? Did you have any children? And then getting a response, "Yes, I did," in a very strong female voice. You know, I don't know, but EVPs are so fascinating to me, and it's fascinating to me that that's the bulk of the evidence that we get. Maybe it's easier to create a voice from nothing than it is to create a physical form from nothing. I don't know.
What do you want to tell people that are fascinated by watching these ghost shows, may have had something happen in their life, and they're considering entering the world of paranormal investigating for themselves?
It does not pay at all. the biggest thing is we get so many emails about, "I want to do this as a career," and it's, okay, this isn't really a career. This is more of a passion. You're going to have to pay for it yourself. You need to buy your own equipment and buy your own and, you know, pay for your own gas and get there on your own. The other thing is, this is not thrill seeking. This is not about sneaking into the cemetery at night and having, you know, a fun Saturday night to tell your friends the next day. This is a field that involves the living more than the dead. It involves calming people down, helping them to understand the experiences that they have aren't making them crazy. and to, you know, and again, like I said before, that we're all in this for the long haul. This is something generational. This isn't something that's going to be explained next week. I would love if it could be explained next week, but this is something that we need to, you know, set in place for future generations to carry on to hopefully get the answers that we're all striving for.
From your lips to God's ears. I love it. Thank you, Heather, so much for coming on to share your story and the book, Memoirs of a Future Ghost. You can find the link for it on today's program, so make sure you click it. And once you get it, folks, make sure that you also rate and review the book, because that will help our guest to get more exposure on Amazon and expose her book and works to a larger audience. The book is quite comprehensive, goes through many different aspects of her life and investigations and the ties to different principles of this paranormal and supernatural. Thank you, Heather, so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it. And I hope second season of Holzer Files comes out soon.
Yeah, you and me both. Thank you very much. That's it for this week, kids. Tuesday, brand new True Crime Tuesday. Make sure you tune in for that. Monday through Friday, Midnight in the Desert, the best in anomalous talk radio. And then Tim and I will be back with you again next Saturday and Sunday when we continue our journey into the dark realms here on Beyond the Darkness.
Done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.